feel that my work was betrayed.
Who have all the fury which Didier Drogba is directing at the referee now.
There obviously seemed to be a palpable discord between manager and players.
Hello and welcome back to Palpable Discord, the Chelsea podcast. I'm Jack Rathbourne, joined as always by Will Dubay and Grant James. Today we're going to be talking about the defeat to Liverpool, Stamford Bridge, 2-0 win for the champions, and didn't go to plan for Frank Lampard's side. I think we're going to dissect the red card incident, the mistake for the second Mane goal, just where the team is left at this point, who involved that did well, who wasn't involved but could come in and maybe boost things a little bit. And then we're going to throw forward to next week and the games ahead. But still pretty raw. I'm going to start with Will. Just give me your first instincts on that result and that performance, Will.
I'm trying hard to not be too reactionary. Obviously, it was a game of two halves. I think the way we set up, I found it quite interesting. Obviously, Havertz playing through the middle. I think that worked to a certain degree. We were obviously kind of penned in, had to do a lot of defending in the first half, but I think we looked pretty comfortable. They didn't really create any openings or any sort of dangerous chances or any shots on goal that particularly troubled us. And I think if anything, we looked potentially more dangerous. We had quite a few openings. Obviously, it didn't result in any problems for Alisson or problems for their defence, but Werner got in some really good positions, and you could see, I sort of alluded to it in the preview, I think, if you can hold out and get to half-time at the very least with the score even, and then if you can go even further and get to sort of the hour mark with the scores even, I think there's definitely chances and opportunities to open Liverpool up. But it's just so frustrating that the red came when it did. I think we were pretty comfortable, and I think it would have been a really good platform to build on going into the second half. Potentially some subs to come on to change the game as well.
Quickly, Will, on that red card, now you've brought it up, just a quick vote from all of us. Definitely a red card?
Yes.
That's all of us, yeah. Crack on.
I just think that Christensen, it kind of summed him up really that half. You know, he's very comfortable, very slick. Looked in control, reading situations well, and then he just switches off. He's in a decent position, and then he just switches off half a second and lets Mane get the run on him. And then it's too late and he drags him down. I mean, I don't know what Kepa's starting position was, but maybe he could have actually got there a little bit quicker if he's maybe his starting position's a little bit higher, but Christensen's got ability, doesn't have to drag him down at that point.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you mentioned whose fault that was, be it Kepa or Christensen for actually making the foul. Before we like dissect whose responsibility it was, I just wanted to ask you guys, and start with you, Grant, in terms of like the decision to bring him down, given that the resulting consequence was a free kick, a pretty low chance. I've seen some debate as to whether it is the right decision at some point, given the time of the game. Obviously, it's very alien for a fan or anybody who enjoys football to think that putting your team down to 10 men could ever be justified. But what was your thoughts on the decision and whether Kepa could shoulder some or maybe even the majority of responsibility?
Yeah, I saw someone mention that, these situations happen a lot, and actually trying to train them and having your defenders have a plan for what to do in that situation might be useful. But I actually didn't think Christensen deliberately brought him down. I think if you look, Mane just stops, and Christensen kind of, it looks like he's sort of rugby tackled him, but I think he's actually trying to stop himself with his hands up, and he's sort of pushed him over as opposed to actually grabbing him and sort of stopping his momentum. I thought Mane had kind of already done that himself. So I'm not sure that Christensen decided to foul him. I think avoiding that situation in the first place, you know, is the way to do it. And yeah, obviously, as a general point, I don't think it makes sense to bring a player down there, especially with VAR being able to quite clearly see if it was a goal-scoring opportunity. And being 1-0 down with 11 men, I think is quite obviously a much more positive situation. I don't know how you guys fought during the game, but once we were down to 10 men, I didn't really feel like we had much chance. Not that I was completely pessimistic, I just felt, you know, it wasn't like Barcelona were going to have a lot of possession and not much penetration. I just think, you know, Liverpool, especially with the set, you know, the personnel we had on the field, I'm not sure we were really that set up to, could have, you know, see out a whole half of defending. And it's, I think Will's right. That sums up Christensen because he played really well for the first 43 minutes. I mean, he's the one that cleared off the line when Salah ran, you know, went round Kepa on the right, and he made a couple of, I think, one good blocked shots. He looked really comfortable, as he did against Brighton, and then that happens, and yeah, you just like typical Christensen. It's kind of like Kepa. He does quite decently, and then you're like, oh, you know, you just get that little bit of hope, and that's what kills you, that you think you might actually be a good player, or, you know, be a Chelsea-level player, and then that happens. So yeah, I honestly don't think he tried to actually rugby tackle him. I think he was sprinting, and Mane just slowed down a bit, and he kind of like got caught sort of with his momentum bringing down Mane, but that's not really that important. It was a red card anyway, and we just go, yeah, I don't think it's that important to actually distinguish that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it just feels, it feels too contrived, too smart or clever to argue that it was possibly the right decision. And you're right, in terms of the starting lineup that we saw, we worried that there was a lack of penetration, a lack of pace to maybe sort of change the game and move in transitions. And that was certainly the case at down with 10 men. I think perhaps Werner was the only option. And actually he did turn out to be somewhat of a threat, considering he never gave up, and he drove the ball in the second half and eventually won the penalty that Jorginho missed. In terms of the opening goal, we know who was at fault for the second goal, Kepa's howler. But the first goal, did you see any sort of anybody at fault for that? I think Reece James was maybe slightly sluggish, but I think Mane is one of the best forwards in the air, I think I can safely say. And just in terms of his leap, even if your shirt tight to him, I think the way that he can lean into the flight of the ball, I think he's always likely to be able to connect. And the pace on the ball was excellent. And I think given his accuracy, I think it's perhaps just a very good goal rather than anybody's fault in particular.
Yeah, I think Glenn Johnson actually did a really good little segment on analysing the goal, because, you know, he's looking at both fullbacks. Obviously on our left flank, there's a 1-2 that bypasses Alonso, and he actually shows Alonso kind of like ball watching, not going with the man. And then there's a really good, you know, like little video clip of him watching Reece James, and he doesn't check his shoulder once in the entire build up to the move. He actually has no idea where Mane is. And if he does, he can get a little bit of body contact with his strength as well. It doesn't take much to maybe put Mane off, even just a little bit of a bump or an arm. Yeah, but as I think you're right, Mane is incredible in the air. And listening to you guys do the preview and talk about our former player, Salah, I mean, I just think Mane is such an... If you look at the front three, he's basically Salah and Firmino combined. He's just good at everything, running behind, tight spaces, dribbling. He's just unplayable.
Yeah, that's right. I think that was just a very good goal. And the way the game unfolded from there, especially with Thiago coming on. And I mean, his role was not incredibly decisive in terms of the burden that was on his shoulders, but the comfort in which he was able to just keep things moving. Liverpool with their fullbacks were always likely to break through, even if it didn't come so prematurely. But we move on to the second goal, Will, and I think it was the final nail in the coffin. I think everybody collectively sighed, neutrals alike. And I think you just see that there is an element of sadness when someone is just, he can't help it, can he? The mistake is there and it's impossible to remove. And given that Mendy is, I mean, we seem to have said this a few times now, but all but done, I think that is that basically. But one of my main questions that left me asking after this is, why did he start?
I have no idea. I mean, I just can't wrap my head around it. I mean, you know, usually when you have a point of view, you try and think of, you know, the opposite view, why, you know, maybe I'm wrong. What's the reason for why he would be picked? But I can't think why he'd be picked. You know, Frank lost faith in him last season, but before lockdown, he dropped him. And then I think he put him back in at the beginning of restart, didn't he? Or am I wrong about that? Did he give Kepa another chance and then drop him again after restart? I'm not 100%. Anyway, I think he did. I think he had another bite at the chair. I think he came back into the team at some point. It might have not been after restart. But anyway, you know, he's had plenty of chances. He's made plenty of mistakes. We know the risks involved with playing him, and especially at the moment where, you know, all eyes are on him. It's become a story, a big story. And we played against Brighton and we started him and he made a bad mistake for the goal. So, I mean, I don't know what Frank was thinking in picking him. I just don't understand the thought process behind that. Maybe you guys can shine some light on that. I can't think of any reason why he would start him.
Yeah, I think he said afterwards that after the Brighton game that Kepa was his keeper and he was happy with him. I think you look at the goal from the goal where was probably his fault, but maybe if you really wanted to argue that it wasn't, maybe if he had some more room to improve. And it's gone too far now. And I think you're right. I think it just doesn't. It wasn't his only mistake. That was the other thing you mentioned, the coming out of his goal. I mean, you could argue that the spin of the ball was a little bit deceiving, but he looked like he was running in treacle, didn't he? The way he was coming out of his box. And I just think that's just one more element that maybe we haven't even thought about, but that's equally another weakness to his game, the way that he's slow off his line. And that should have led to a goal were it not for either Christensen's alertness or perhaps Firmino's lack of and just his lack of killer instinct in around the 6-yard box. But the shape, I think you're right, Will, you mentioned that to a point it looked relatively promising, and after a shaky first few minutes, I think they relaxed into their shape and the out balls were starting to be there. I think you saw Jorginho, one of his rare positives, switch it out to Alonso, who didn't get forward much, but once he did, it was acres of space with Alexander-Arnold tucking into Fabinho just to make sure there was no space for Werner cutting inside. And I think that was an element of respect from Klopp towards Werner. But Grant, what did you make of the shape? And did you think it was by design leading towards what Will suggested in the preview, keeping it tight and maybe profiting in that second half when Liverpool maybe eased off a little bit?
Yeah, I think Lampard actually, he alluded to that post-game. He said in the second half, you know, we would have played a bit higher up and grown in confidence a bit in possession because we started the game sort of lacking that confidence in moving the ball. I think Jorginho gave it away a few times. Yes, I think probably the plan was to, you know, keep it tight and in the second half use his bench, which is arguably stronger than what Liverpool had in terms of options to change the game. In the forward line, Liverpool had Origi and Minamino, and we had, you know, Abraham, Hudson-Odoi, Giroud, etc. So actually keeping it tight and then trying to score in the second half would have made sense. With the shape, I think it did make sense in terms of if Havertz had played on the right like he did against Brighton, he would have been pushed all the way back and basically into the defensive line to track Robertson. And with Willian gone, and Willian really is so key in these big games, you know, tracking the opposition fullback, basically Mount's the only one in the squad who can do that job. And obviously we only have one defensive winger, so you have to decide which flank to play Mount on. And then you know on the other side you have, you know, you have slight weakness defensively in tracking fullbacks. So I think it made sense to play Mount out there, and he did a decent job against Robertson. And then Havertz playing as the false nine also probably made sense in terms of he can just strengthen that midfield a bit more, dropping back, making it really tight centrally. And then Werner obviously playing as a sort of a left-sided forward. He didn't really track Alexander Arnold all the time. But he had a lot of opportunities to actually get at Fabinho. And I'm sure when we looked at the team sheet with, you know, with no Gomez, kind of optimistic that he could do something in there, you know, in those interactions. And I think, Jack, you said you were counting carefully in the first half just how he was doing in those duels. And there's two in particular that he had in 1v1 and Fabinho was brilliant in stopping him. But it just seemed like a little bit of confidence or, just the sort of thing that would come once he's played a bit more.
Yeah, definitely. I think I was sort of keeping a close eye on the battles with Fabinho, and it was early on it was Fabinho who got the better of him in terms of a pure 1v1 contest, but Werner definitely got himself in the game, and not just moving forward when he dropped deep and spun from around the centre circle and eventually got his shot off on the dribble. That was quite promising. And then also moving right back into his own half, I think, when Chelsea cleared it, and also from goal kicks, he showed that he can actually shoulder a little bit of the burden from a physical point of view. He was very capable of shielding the ball, laying off and luring Fabinho into a bit of a trap and releasing the space for the likes of Mount and even Kovacic at one point. Very good when Kovacic gets that momentum going forward, and he can sort of use his teammates almost as like a backboard when you play five aside. He's great to move off, and he's one of the best dribblers, I think, in the Premier League. But I think regards to Havertz at Will, if you just look at his starting position almost as well as a false nine, and then you also look at his heat map for the game, eventually his most common position was slightly right inside his own half of that centre circle. How did you see his role today? And also, we know that he was relatively quiet against Brighton too. Moving forward, is that going to be his role? Or is Lampard desperate to get Ziyech and obviously, Pulisic back in the team?
I'm not really sure. I think obviously his role today was kind of playing that false nine. He was, I don't think he really operated as a false nine today. I think most of the time he was having to compete for aerial duels that were put onto his head from goal kicks from Kepa when we couldn't play out, which was a big theme. We couldn't in the early stages, especially, we couldn't play out. Kovacic and Jorginho were really struggling to sort of turn on the ball. I think we can talk a little bit more about Jorginho maybe a little bit later, but yeah, just focusing on Havertz. I mean, it's going to be interesting, like it is for a lot of other players that we've brought in, to see how they fit into the team and how Lampard wants to build the side. We've touched on this quite a lot in the first sort of four episodes, and I think it remains a little bit of a mystery as to how he fits all these players in and actually where their best positions are. And that applies to Havertz more than any of them. He said in his sort of press conference the other day, I think his sort of announcement press conference, that he sees his best position as number 10. So you're thinking that it kind of makes sense to play him off of Werner. We sort of talked about that, how that could complement each other. But I don't really like us in a two. The players to play in the two, I'm not sure we have the right combination to play there. I think when Kante and Kovacic play there, they both want to go and press. They both want to, be that kind of second wave of pressure. And you kind of want to use their engine, have them buzzing around the pitch, kind of operating in that two as the sort of eight, more of the eight in that two. And you need someone who's going to sit and provide the balance and pass the ball, move the ball quickly, take it on the turn, move the ball quickly, cover ground and be physical enough to, physically good enough to kind of defend in transition. And we don't have that player. We have Jorginho, and Jorginho is not that player. He's okay. He tries hard. He's willing. He's obviously a good professional, but he's just so limited. And I just don't think he's anywhere near the level that we want to be at. If you compare him to someone like Fabinho, even if you compare him to someone like Rodri at City, who I think he's got physical limitations as well in transition, but the way Rodri moves the ball, turns on the ball, gets City going, there's really nothing that Jorginho brings to the party, really. And obviously the only other kind of natural option as the sitting midfielder is Gilmore, and he's out. And you could even argue that's not even Gilmore's best role. Kante is probably our best player playing that position, but like I said, he's slightly wasted there, and you don't really want to use him there. So I think that for me is the biggest missing ingredient from our side, regardless of all these players we've signed. We've obviously addressed the goalkeeper now. I still think that's going to be an issue for us going forward, finding that midfield balance, how we find that midfield balance. I think if we go into the rest of the season with the players that we've got, I still think probably the best solution is to play a 4-3-3, because at least with a 4-3-3, you have a defined holding midfielder and you achieve balance that way. And for me, the player that has to play there is Kante, even though he's probably pretty wasted in that position. I think in terms of just providing balance, it's probably going to be necessary.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think you're right in terms of having the right combination. It's going to be tricky for Lampard to get the best out of Havertz this season, even if he does settle pretty quickly. And you're right, I think Barkley was perhaps a little bit unlucky not to feature today, and I think he will moving forward if Frank eventually comes around to the point of view that Kante does need to start in that holding midfield role, because unless it is a very low block, and we saw Jorginho have some success there, I think under Sarri, I think he's just so limited in terms of when he is hassled, and the way Liverpool sort of unseated him a little bit. I mean, it's concerning. So that is definitely an issue. And you're right, these attacking options, they're not going to make the difference if Frank can't find the balance. Isn't that right, Grant?
Yeah, look, the two tactical things I wanted to mention to finish off the first half, because, you know, the game was so different between the two different halves. We had, you know, a nice plan in the first half, and then second half, yeah, it's... Well, anyway, we'll get to that in a second. But the one thing was, I wonder if Frank actually said to Kepa and the defenders, you know, if we are being pressed high, let's rather play it direct. And if you were playing Werner as the nine, you can't really do that. The ball just comes back all the time. So Havertz actually playing as the false nine gives some physical presence. I know he's not going to actually win the headers against Virgil van Dijk, but he's at least, you know, giving you some second balls to pick up. And we didn't pick up any of them in the first half, like, or hardly any of them. I mean, I kept watching van Dijk wins a header and it just goes down to Keita or to Henderson. And I don't think Kovacic and Kante were pushing up enough to actually win that second ball. And obviously that's partly the distance from being deep for the build up and then having to get high up the pitch when Kepa kicks long. Because Kepa usually kicks long with the defenders, usually still on the byline. He doesn't like actually say, okay, get up the pitch, I'm going to go long, and then we can compress things. And the other thing as well, it was in the first half and the second half, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I was basically just screaming just to like play the ball to Werner in the channels, because the ball was on all the time. Just needed someone just to basically just hoik it around the corner and behind the defense. It didn't even have to be like a get your head up, but just like, you know where he is, just swing it around to the far side. And I mean, like Fabregas would have done that. He would have just taken a touch and just hit into that channel, or Ziyech. And even Jorginho, you know, that pass he got for Abraham last year where he played around the corner first time for that through ball. I think it was away at Burnley, if I'm not mistaken. He didn't do that once. And that could have been so dangerous in this game. It was really frustrating to me. And then, you know, finally Kovacic did it in the second half. He actually slipped Werner in and we had a decent opportunity. So I don't know, I was just screaming up for a midfielder who can actually pass the ball over a longer distance. And I don't think any of those three can. Jorginho, like, he can basically pass the ball about 13 yards. So sort of enough to get the ball from the penalty spot over the goal line. And Kovacic, for his dribbling, is not really a good long range passer either. Kante as well, you know, kind of gets his head down a bit and dribbles out of pressure. And then he maybe, you know, gets a good pass away. So that's just two things I find so frustrating, that we kind of played long balls in the first two games, first to Ruben and then to Havertz. And then we obviously had Werner, and we haven't really released him early in both games.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think there's an element of Frank not being ruthless enough with Jorginho and the options he has. And I think he was punished again with his lack of ruthlessness with Kepa. On Jorginho, quickly to round off his performance and to move into that second half, his main contribution in that second half was to obviously miss the penalty. Will, do you have a problem with obviously the technique? We know it very well now. I think it's just one of those things, right, in terms of when Eden Hazard finally missed a penalty with his trademark technique, it's going to come at some point. And I think given that Jorginho has only missed one in open play since he joined Chelsea, I think he can at least get a pass for this particular moment.
He's missed two. Well, yeah, in open play, fair enough. Yeah, he missed in the shootout against City, which for me, just, it counts just as much as any other penalty. No, I mean, to be honest, I don't want to see him in the side. So, I'd rather Werner obviously takes penalties, and I'd rather Jorginho doesn't have to be on the pitch. So then he's not going to be on penalties. But yeah, he's got a good record. It's one of those. I don't read too much into like the technique. I think for the most part, he's good from the spot and it works. So I wouldn't read too much into that. But I would like to see Werner take one, and obviously he's played well the first two games, but you want to get your strikers off the mark. I would have liked to see him take that today, take the ball off him, that's probably a bit of an emotional response. I think ultimately your penalty taker should be all preset before the game and that's it. I think the most interesting thing is going to be, is he going to be given a chance, more chances? I just don't know. It's so hard to read Frank on his team selections. It's obviously become increasingly harder with how many players he's got to choose from now, but you've just got no idea really who his favourites are. You know, you'd say obviously Mason Mount is a player who consistently gets a look in, and I think he more than deserves it. And I think he's a brilliant player, super reliable. And I think I mentioned in our sort of first episode, I think he's going to play every single one of these big games. It's just strange. I mean, Christensen, obviously we've touched on Christensen getting so many chances and making so many mistakes last season. Jorginho was a real kind of big player for us at the start of Frank's reign, and then after the restart, Kante more or less took his position, his most natural position at the base of that three, and he wasn't getting a look in, and now he's back in the side. We've already touched on Kepa being given two chances, and then he's come back in the side. I just find it a bit strange, and I think sometimes I don't know whether the players eventually start looking at that and thinking, I'm not really sure. It's hard to read this guy, and sometimes if the players start scratching their heads on team selection and things like that, it can cause problems. Obviously, we're not seeing training. We're not seeing how the players train, and obviously Jorginho and Christensen might be sort of unbelievable trainers and things like that. But I think sometimes the importance on training, and I know you mentioned this before the game, Grant, that you think sometimes you read too much into training. At the end of the day, it is a training session, and what you can do in the matches is more important. But it'll be interesting just to see that, again, whether Jorginho is given more chances going forward. He might have to be, because we might be short of numbers in that position. But I don't know. I think I keep going back to it, but Frank needs to start. Obviously, it's very early on. We've got so many new players, and the majority of them haven't played yet. But over the next kind of month, 6 weeks, we have to start to see some kind of identity develop, some kind of way of playing, and some kind of consistency in what players are important, what players aren't. Is Tomori now going to be given a chance? Is Christensen going to be benched? I mean, it's just, we need some consistency. Part of that is the player's responsibility. Sometimes players have to really make a claim for a position. And a lot of the time players are very inconsistent, last season and after restart. But it's also to do with kind of the consistency in selection. So it's a bit of both, but I think we have to start seeing that over the next kind of 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, I think you actually touch on what I thought was going to be a small point, but it's actually quite alarming if you think of the wider context of the season. At the start of last season, or almost as we moved a few months in, even though there was inconsistency, there was clearly a DNA there, that the way that Lampard wanted to play and a style which became familiar. But there's a slight concern for me that is almost disappearing. And I think you're right, and even more so in terms of the style of play and the patterns that we see with team selection. I think that can certainly, it can certainly spread amongst the dressing room, and I think Lampard needs to be a little bit cautious there. Grant, in terms of those who we've already mentioned maybe don't deserve any more chances, we did see in the second half that not just Tomori coming in through necessity, but actually did pretty well, I think, in my opinion. He managed 8 clearances in the game, which was the most, or the joint most, with Zouma for a Chelsea player, despite clearly playing much less time. I thought Zouma again was pretty good, and I think he might be the tried and tested one where Frank will just shuffle through the other options and it will probably be Thiago. But I think Tomori certainly did himself some good.
Yeah, I mean, it's his first appearance since February. He came on playing to Zouma's right, which is usually, they usually played the other way around when they were a regular pairing. And I thought he played really well. Obviously, I like him as a player, so I watched him really carefully. I was sitting like 1 meter from the screen. Strangely enough, I like to do that for the, you know, just to look at the, you know, tactics and so forth. And he played really well. He made a few good interceptions, a couple of good tackles. He was reasonable on the ball. You know, he played one really nice left-footed sweeping pass out to James when needed. Obviously, defending quite deep is not necessarily a strength because with his speed, it's the ideal chance to actually play relatively high up the pitch. I hope that he's back in the picture now. I'm not sure exactly if the FIFA rules still apply, but the, you know, the rule was there that you could only play for two teams in a season. So obviously, if he goes on a loan for, you know, until January and he has a bad loan, we can't actually switch that loan up. So playing him is probably a sign that we may be going to hang on to him, especially that Rudiger wasn't in the squad at all. But I do think that the fact that we are two games into the season, nearly three, we haven't really actually nailed down our four centre-backs is a bit worrying. You know, Lampard should have had enough now to work on to actually decide which one he wants out of the squad. You can't keep five for the season. And I don't think you can keep three goalkeepers either. So, and we've got three left-backs. Obviously, we're trying to shift Emerson, but he's clearly out of the picture. But all five centre-backs seem to be kind of in favour. Or at least, you know, in the picture, at least now that Tomori's actually had a game. I just think the quicker we can make decisions on our squad, the better. At least at centre-back, you know, get that nailed down. Pick the four you want. If there's one you're going to try and sell or loan out, get that done. But yeah, I thought Tomori played really well. And it was quite difficult because obviously in the start of the second half, we were playing just the narrow three and then Mount and Werner sort of like a two, even though they dropped in. So there was really no protection for the fullbacks. So Zouma and Tomori had to kind of move out quite a lot into the channels. And I think that, yeah, I mean, the goal came that way with Zouma pulled out trying to defend that 1-2 instead of being in the box. That's his area to actually defend that, to hit that ball cleared usually. But yeah, Tomori is good at that, going out and covering behind his fullback. I hope he gets a game in against Barnsley. And next weekend, he's probably going to be left out because Thiago Silva is going to play and then he partners Zouma because they suit each other a bit better. I just think it's a pity, but I would like to see him at least in the first three centre-backs and then maybe, you know, Christensen sort of as the fourth. Even though he's played decently in these two games, Christensen, I just think the ceiling's much higher for Tomori with him being 2 years younger, just so quick, and also the way we've played with him in the side with the, you know, the wins at Spurs and the way at Ajax, we haven't had those results with Christensen. So I hope he's back in the picture and he's forced his way in through training. And yeah, with training, yeah, that's the thing about Jorginho. Lampard always says, oh, he trains really well, he drives the session, but I'd rather he say like, yeah, he's a great player and he plays really well on match day than he trains well, because training's one thing, and it, of course, it's an indicator that good trainers generally play well in matches, but it's only a means to an end. You train to play well in a game, and if you pick your lineups always on training, that's not necessarily the way to go. Rather, like, I understand if a guy's really a liability and he's just like, you know, walking around and stuff, but I mean, we all know Riccardo Cavallo used to be terrible in training. I mean, I know Benny McCarthy said he was like literally a disgrace in training. Mourinho would send him to say, go home, Ricky. But on the match day, he was literally man of the match every week. So clearly some players can do that. We know Tevez needed to rest after games for like 3 days and not train because he was so like spent from the match. I mean, no one can accuse him of not being up for games and playing well. So I think the balance has to be found. And it's obviously, I'm speaking partly by Callum, you know, you've got no minutes today, despite two wingers being out.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think on Will's theme as to the style of play and also the alarming inconsistencies with team selection. Grant mentions quite a good point about Barnsley. You'd imagine Tomori certainly gets a start there, and even if Thiago comes in for next weekend against West Brom, he would certainly elevate his status maybe into that third position and put pressure on the club to maybe ditch Rudiger or even Christensen on loan if they can find somebody to pick them up. As for that Barnsley game, who do you see sort of coming in, and how do you think Lampard should approach that game? Because it's actually given the premature nature of the season, it's a pivotal week, isn't it? Because you look at a game like Barnsley, it's a wonderful opportunity to sort of really assess the rest of the squad, given the inability to do so against, certainly the first game against Brighton, because it was a must win against a team that certainly Chelsea should be imposing themselves on. And then obviously Liverpool, a very strong opponent, which obviously limits the amount of options you can roll out as far as Lampard's concerned. So yeah, Barnsley seems like a really good opportunity. And then you obviously have West Brom away, who they've looked very leaky in their first two games back in the top flight. So it's a big weekend with little wiggle room for Lampard. He's got to get it right, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, just quickly on the centre backs, just before Barnsley, I think I don't think four centre backs that are all expecting to play is an ideal scenario for sort of building a squad. I think Tomori kind of crept in as fourth choice by surprise at the start of last season, and that kind of works, and he forced his way in because when he got his chance, he played really well. But I think ultimately the best kind of profile of squad you want to build is you want to have three really good centre backs who are all expected to play and all kind of pushing each other. And then the fourth one, you kind of want them to be maybe a fullback that can play centre back really well, or you want it to be a young player who's learning off of those three experienced centre backs. Because really that fourth one's only really going to play if the manager's uncertain about his centre backs, which isn't an ideal scenario. So you're rotating your centre backs every week like Frank did last season, or the fourth choice is only going to play if there's an injury crisis. So I think it's not really ideal having four, but maybe for this season it'll be okay, because there's the games are coming thick and fast. But I don't know, if you look at where we were 3 weeks ago, I think everyone's expecting Tomori to go to Everton, and now it looks like Rudiger, who Frank's talked about in kind of glowing terms in the past, agent Rudiger, who helped us sign all these great German players, is now being potentially, you know, offloaded. I think Rudiger, there'll probably be takers on loan. You know, there'll be lots of takers to take him on loan with a view to buy, and probably Christensen. But I don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen with these centre backs. But obviously, he needs to make a decision quite quickly, and we need to figure that out. Barnsley, yeah, it'll be interesting, obviously, to see some of the players that haven't featured at all, like Callum, like Tammy. I think, again, if we're talking about building a squad, if it looks like Werner's primary position is going to be through the middle as a striker, as a centre forward up front on his own. So again, when you rotate week to week for these games, and obviously, I mean, if assuming Frank's not going to play two up front, he's never played two up front. I think the only time he's played two up front is in last pre-season when he played a diamond on a few occasions in the early friendly games and some when we played some Irish teams. But so one of those players, either Giroud or Tammy, is not going to start against Barnsley. So I don't know how you can sort of keep either Giroud or Tammy happy if they're sitting on the bench against Barnsley. So I don't know whether that's kind of a unrealistic, unsustainable situation. Maybe one of them's going to have to go. But I don't know. I guess obviously one of Tammy or Giroud comes in, Callum has to start. I mean, if Callum doesn't start, then that's serious alarm bells for him. One of the midfielders is probably going to have to start, who started today, maybe Kovacic, because maybe he needs more minutes in the tank. Barkley obviously comes into the side. Maybe Havertz could start again, seeing as he came off early, just kind of get a little bit more acclimatised to English football, obviously against much lesser opposition. Tomori and I don't know who else will play. Azpilicueta needs minutes. Do we know if Chilwell's, is he not fit to have any involvement? Because that would be...
I think Chilwell's going to have to train the whole week with Pulisic, according to Lampard. So maybe Thiago Silva's, you know, gets his debut in that one.
Yeah. I mean, and Loftus-Cheek might get another chance. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to sort of pick a team off the top of my head, but there'll be a lot of rotation. I think probably centre-back's the most interesting area to see who comes in there and how, and also just how players seize the opportunities they're getting. Because obviously it's only Barnsley, but I think Frank's clearly a manager who, if a player comes in, if he takes training as a real kind of he looks at training and picks teams based off that, then, you know, if a player comes in and does well against Barnsley, that's going to do, you know, it's really going to help their cause to move them up the pecking order. So it'll be interesting to see Callum's approach to the game, Tammy's approach to the game, you know, these players that really haven't featured at all. So I'm quite looking forward to watching it, but obviously I don't know whether it's on TV anywhere. But yeah, quite keen to watch that one.
Final thoughts on Barnsley, Grant, just in terms of what you expect and what can, in an ideal world, what can be achieved moving into next weekend against West Brom?
Yeah, the West Brom game to start with is always a scary one, because that's the game where AVB and Di Matteo got sacked after losing at West Brom. Obviously, it's not going to happen to Lampard this week, but it's always a bit scary. Ozzie Gallagher can't play in that game as well against us. I think for Barnsley, I think I'd like Havertz to start just to get a bit of fitness and, you know, maybe have a good performance, get some confidence. But I think Will's right that we saw it last year with the Man United game in the Carabao. Batshuayi played and Giroud was on the bench, and they both desperately needed games at that time because Tammy was playing every minute basically. And now we have the same in midweek. One of them will start, probably one will be a sub. And then the following week, probably pull a six back. So maybe we only have one strike on the bench in Premier League games. So, and then with Havertz as well playing as a false nine, I don't think it's sustainable to have Giroud as the fourth choice striker. And I think they might, be maybe an attempt to let him go before the window, or he maybe just agitates slightly and sort of maybe his agent gets on him and say, look, you know, says I've got an offer for you in Italy or whatever. And he might just be, you know, sort of a left field late player to leave. I just can't see Lampard keeping, you know, four forwards if you can't have it as an option and five centre backs, unless he's just going to have like this crazy kind of clusterfuck of a squad and just be like, you know, random changes and stuff. I don't think that works, even in this busy schedule. So Barnsley, a nice win, maybe 20 minutes for Werner off the bench or something on the wing just to get a goal would be good. Get some confidence. Obviously, next week we play Ivanovic against West Brom, which should be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, it has some negative memories for Chelsea, West Brom, but also some positive ones too. Well, 3.5 years ago now, when Conte's side sealed the title, Batshuayi's goal, I think some happy memories there at least. Will, if we just sort of wrap up now, on, just in terms of the Liverpool game, was there one standout positive to take, and also just one negative which needs to be acted upon by Lampard, and in summary?
I think positive, I would say Werner. I think he looked, you can just see he's going to be one of those relentless attacking players who might sometimes frustrate, but that's probably a byproduct of the fact that he's involved so much and he's getting in so many good positions. And obviously you can't score in every kind of decent position you get in, but I think we can, again, I think probably he was maybe the biggest positive from Brighton, and I think he's potentially the biggest positive from today in the first half anyway. I thought Kante looked sharp. I think he looks fit. He's getting to little second balls. He's reading things really quickly. So I think if he can avoid injury, it looks like he's going to have, you know, a really good season. In terms of negatives, for me, it's just that uncertainty around the kind of spine of the team. I think obviously we need some players to come back, but it's just that midfield balance. Another reminder that Jorginho is just, for me, it is not the level of player that we require. If we want to get back to the level that, you know, Liverpool are and even Man City are, we need a better player to play in that position. I just worry that we're not going to do any business in that position. And if we're waiting for, you know, an 18 or 19-year-old Billy Gilmore to come back and solve those problems, I think, you know, there's a lot to ask for a young player that's been out for probably the longest period of his career to date. So for me, the midfield balance just remains a real concern.
And to you, Grant, finally?
I think the biggest thing is just regret, because if we played Liverpool in a few weeks with, you know, Pulisic fit and maybe Chilwell, slightly more dynamic team, I think we could have beaten them. And even in the second half today, I think if we'd stayed 11, we would have had a pretty good chance of at least getting a point in this game. And the fact that we still have Kepa and Jorginho starting after 200 million spent is just it's a huge frustration for me. So, yeah, and positives. Not quite sure. I think the fact that we played relatively well in the first half and competed with them, possibly, although to do it in a style that's so different from what we saw 12 months earlier against United. Yes, we lost 4-0 at Old Trafford, but you could see something building there with high pressing, and then we come up against Liverpool sort of, you know, quite passive. And yeah, it's a good plan to win the game, but it does feel a slight, it's still a slight regret that we're not building towards something in a playing style or in a personnel, you know, in terms of our starting personnel. As Will says, it's just, yeah, let's just get a style for most games and a starting 15 sort of players that play most of the games, and I think we'll be in better shape then.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, I think the first half, like Grant said, we shouldn't overreact. We've got lots of players to come back, 5 or 6 players to come back. We've got a goalkeeper to come in that's, I think we all agree, even if he's kind of mid-level average, he's going to make a big difference, and that's worth points. But, you know, ultimately we need to get to the point where Liverpool are. And obviously they play the same system for every game. Obviously, you need to get to the point where you're so good and you've built such an identity that you don't need to change really anything for the opponent. Only, you know, those top level Champions League games, you might tweak the system. But if you look at Liverpool today, every substitution they made, obviously they're doing it from kind of a more privileged position, being the red card and things like that. But every player that comes on the pitch, they know exactly what their role is in that system. That's something we need to strive for. Obviously, there's nothing wrong with having a little bit of flexibility, but we want to be at the level where, you know, we're not changing our system and our way, our tactics for, you know, games where we go away to Brighton or go away to Newcastle, things like that. We need to have a style and a way of playing that teams can't cope with, and they have to change it, you know, for us. And really, that's where we want to kind of at least kind of try to edge towards that this season, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think there were elements today which show little hints of positivity. I think you touched on it well. There is an element of regret. I think no doubt both teams could argue that in a few weeks they'd be a different team. Clearly, the arrival of Thiago for Liverpool would elevate themselves somewhat. But I think Chelsea are clearly able to improve vastly more than Liverpool are at this point. And just in terms of the quantity of players that available to Lampard, or in theory available to him when all fit. So, yeah, that does leave a little bit of regret. But it's still very, very early in the season. And I think you look at teams around Chelsea. You saw Arsenal on Saturday, not exactly at it. Still won, of course, which is very good for them. Spurs have obviously lost already. And you look at United, really struggling. So it's certainly not the end of the world that there's a defeat here. And perhaps it is a slight consolation that it came against a team which perhaps even on Chelsea's best day, they may struggle to pick up points against. So, yeah, moving forward to Barnsley, it will be fascinating to see how this team evolves. And because at some point there will be an element of growing pressure under Lampard. So that will be really interesting. But more and more players coming back from fitness, and the arrival of Mendy at least should certainly bode well. But yeah, I think that pretty much covers it for today, guys, on the Palpable Discord podcast. Thanks for listening in. I've been Jack Rathborne. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Palpable Pod. You can follow me at Jack Rathborne. You can follow Will at Dubay Will. And you can follow Grant at Grant DeSmit. We will be back next week to take a look at that Barnsley game, and also throw it forward to West Brom, which promises to be a critical game, certainly at this early stage of the season. But thanks for listening to Palpable Discord. We'll be back next week.